You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. I'll be joined shortly by co-host Dennis Wissman. And today we are pleased to have Richard Haydeck join us. Richard is the author of the new book, Shifting Gears, 50 Baby Boomers Share Their Meaningful Journeys in Retirement. Richard is a former life sciences executive and mentor, and now has an active retirement. He is actually becoming the voice of boomer retirement stories. He's immersed in challenging the boundaries of his own retirement while observing the experiences and areas of curiosity of his fellow retirees. At age 7, he was sure he wanted to be an author. Now, 66 years later, that dream has become a reality. The inspiration for the book came from hearing about the meaningful journeys in retirement taken by friends and colleagues. They were doing fascinating activities at this stage of their life, and often completely new directions from their prior careers. The idea that these stories could become a book became a driving force for Richard. His 75-plus interviews and his frequent social media interactions have developed his perspectives and insights on the retirement activities of the boomer generation. Richard's prior roles as both a leader and a mentor have been based on his ability to listen and to get people to share their feelings. He uses a style of interviewing with short, open questions to get people to open up about their retirement stories. The result is Shifting Gears. He graduated from Miami University and received his MBA from Xavier University. He is happily married to his wife of 52 years, and he has 2 daughters and 4 grandsons. Richard's own retirement has been hyperactive. He learns new things through weekly interactions at Stanford, formerly via attending lectures and via Zoom during the pandemic. Each year, he reads about 100 books and bikes more than 3,000 miles. He mentors organizations serving refugees and small farmers in Ghana. He combines family time with domestic and international travel. Richard, thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm glad to join you. This will be fun.
So what inspired you to write your book, Shifting Gears?
Well, there's 2 parts to that answer, Joe. When I was 7 years old, I was convinced I wanted to be an author. And not only was I convinced of it, I started taking the actions to do it. Every day, I would write a story. And it was always some goofy story, sci-fi or fantasy or whatever, never longer than a page. But almost every day, I did it. And I was going along, and my friends would say, well, I'm going to be a fireman when I grow up. And I said, well, yeah, but I'm going to be an author. That lasted about a year. About when I turned 8 years old, I said, you know, I think I'd rather go outside and play baseball. I don't want to write any more stories. I then had about a 65-year spell where being an author disappeared. Then I came into retirement, and there was kind of a turning point here. One of my buddies and I were talking, and he said, you know, I've never told you this, but I was in the Senior Olympics. And I said, wait, we've known each other for years. How could you not tell me that story? He says, oh, I was too humble to talk about it. It's something that sounds like I'm bragging. And I said, how'd you do? And he says, oh, I won a medal. And he says, and then I went on to the Chinese Olympics and I won another medal. And I said, well, that's an amazing story. Within a matter of another week or two, I ran into 2 other people who I had a similar experience. They told me something they were doing that I was astonished by that I hadn't known about. And I had this kind of eureka moment where I said, these stories need to be told. Maybe I can go back to that 7-year-old's wish to be an author, and I'll do this. And so that was kind of a turning point, and I decided that's when it's time to go write a book.
So for your book, I think you interviewed about 75 people?
That's correct, yes.
Right. So what were the major themes that emerged from all those interviews?
I think there's a generational theme that's probably not surprising, but it's more pronounced than I thought, and that is baby boomers are going to continue to be baby boomers in retirement. You know, we've been an active generation. We were protesting in the 60s. We were inventing things in the 70s. We were doing all sorts of things that were breaking new ground. So, you know, some would think, well, this generation has accomplished a lot. It's been an interesting generation. When it retires, it'll just slow down and relax. Wrong. That isn't the way it's been at all. This generation has continued to innovate, continued to have new passions, continued to do things to have a retirement that isn't like our parents' retirement, a retirement that has, and they're not all earth-shattering kinds of things. Some of the things are more personal and what someone wanted to do all their lives. One of the guys moved to a place near Yellowstone National Park. He's within an hour's drive of four great rivers, and he goes fishing every day, he said. And he said, well, once in a while, I'll miss a day if the weather's bad. But he says, oh, I love it. And that is my passion. And it's just neat to see how much joy he gets from that and how important that is to him and what it means to him in terms of his own satisfactions.
I have to go back to the first question for a second. And I see a linkage between these two. And I'm wondering whether or not you saw the same thing in the people you talked to. You mentioned in your own what inspired you to write the book was going back to when you were 7, 8 years old. Did you find that a lot of the people that you interviewed had actually perhaps gone back to something that they had liked earlier on in life?
I think that's right. And I think while you're working, there's things that you don't have the time to do, but you know you want to do. And they may be things from when you were 7 years old. This guy who was fishing, my guess is he may have been fishing when he was 7 years old and always wanted to do more. And I think through some of the other stories as well, people decided to go back to an earlier passion, an earlier hobby, an earlier goal, and rejuvenate it in retirement. You get to do whatever you want in retirement. If you can deal with the health and wealth challenges, if you're not broke and you're not sick, then you get to do whatever you want. And that means if you've got a passion for something, then go do it. And that passion can be whatever is important to you. But you've got the freedom, and you've got the freedom of trial and error, too. You can try something. One of the guys in the book, he said, I know I've got certain wishes, but I don't know exactly how to do it. I'm going to do trial and error until I get this right. And in his case, he was looking for the ideal volunteering opportunity. And he went through four different ones in a fairly short period of time until he found the one that was perfect for him. Because he says, that's what I get to do. I'm retired. I get to do trial and error. And if I don't like something, I move on and do something else.
That's a great mindset because it is different than going to work every day, as we know in our primary careers. But just even that, having the mindset of willing to try things and take that journey is fantastic. That's great.
One of the people I interviewed made the comment, which I don't think it actually made it into the book, but he said, I don't think I've pressed this issue enough until my friends and family tell me, what are you talking about? You can't do that. But I think it's really true. There's a couple of stories in particular where people have gone way beyond what the people around them thought were reasonable things to do.
Like biking 3,000 miles a year.
That's one of them.
That's great.
One of my favorite stories, and I hope you liked it as well, is a lady that had four surgeries in 3 years. She had two knee replacements, two hip replacements, and was on a cane for 3 years. And then at the end of it, she said, she was in her 70s. I'm never going to be in better shape than I am now. I got all new parts. I can get myself fit. I'm going to do something really tough. And she said, I'm going to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa, 19,000 feet, a 6-day climb. That sounds like the kind of challenge I want to take on. And every one of her friends said, you're crazy. You can't do that. You couldn't have done that when you were 20 years old. And she says, you don't understand. I'm going to do this. And she had the freedom to choose to do that.
That's remarkable. So Richard, when you think back over the interviews now, what surprised you?
There's a new concept, and I made up some words here. The words are relaxed intensity. And people say to me, relaxed intensity, you're crazy. You can't be relaxed and intense. And my answer to that is, yes, you can once you're retired, because the stakes of the game are not so onerous. You can take on big challenges with tough goals and things that are hard to do, but you can do it with a smile on your face. You can do it without a boss breathing down your neck. You can do it the way you want to do it. So you can do it with relaxation and still have the intensity of being goal-focused. And one of the guys in particular was diagnosed with cancer at about the same time that he retired. And of course, that was a devastating blow to him. He had all these plans for his retirement. And then he chose some treatment things that turned out to be correct. But in the middle of that process, he turned to one of the cancer docs that was treating him and he said, "What can I do to help here?" And he said, I knew what the doctor was going to say, make a donation to this and this and this. He would write a check. And he said, I was surprised. The guy turned to me and he said, "Now, we need a cancer house in this community. We need a place where people can stay while they're being treated and that it doesn't cost them anything and where their families can stay while they're being treated." And this guy went on a several-year mission to lead that effort for his community and for that cancer treatment center. And he said, every step of the way, I was having a ball. I was enjoying it. I knew it was a tough challenge. I knew there were ways you could get stressed out about this, but that wasn't the way I was going to do it. That was not the way I was going to lead others. We were going to do this in a relaxed way. And that's when I kind of came upon this idea of relaxed intensity. This guy exemplified that. And then I started seeing it in several of the other people that I interviewed, that you can do it in a retiree's way so that you always have a smile on your face and you're never stressed out, but you can still do great things.
Love that phrase because it really gets at the activity without the withdrawal. Really still in the game.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think you have to be retired to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's easier when you're retired. I think back and say, could I have done that when I was 30 years old? Could I have done that when I was 40? And the answer is, yeah, probably. But it never occurred to me. I don't know if millennials are all real relaxed about their job and don't get all tied up in knots over it and all that sort of thing. I suspect they don't have relaxed intensity, but that they could. But retirees, it's almost like an art form that we've developed. And we can do it naturally. We don't even think about it.
So some of the people you interviewed talked about the timing of their retirement. What did they highlight for you about the big question of deciding when to retire?
I think for a lot of them, my own opinion is they may have gotten that wrong. And the reason they got it wrong was because the retirement decision is what I would call a from decision. Where am I coming from? When do I want to leave? When am I tired of this work environment? And then they said, well, I'm tired of my job, so I'm going to retire. And then they wake up the next morning and say, now what am I going to do? The ones who did it very well had what I've described as a going to mentality. They never described themselves as an ex-doctor or an ex-architect or an ex-businessman. They described themselves as, I'm now a volunteer working with social entrepreneurs, or I'm now an athlete who's running his 19th marathon, or I've got an identity of what I'm going to. And I think for a lot of the people that I talked to, because they were driven by what they were going from, the retirement decision was more about their work rather than what they were going to do after they stopped working.
So some others in your book opined on another big topic, and that's location. What did people focus on most in deciding where to live in retirement?
For a lot of them, they had this kind of retirement idea that sounded like vacation. And vacation, so if you vacation in Florida, of course you retire in Florida because you had a lot of fun when you went there for 2 weeks when you were on vacation. But I think the big revelation was for a lot of people, they kind of came around to say, no, it's more complicated than that. I don't want to be that far from my family. I want to be near a great university so I can take some continuing education courses. Or I want to be in a place that's near where my friends are. Or I want to be in a place where I can get the right kind of part-time work that I would enjoy or the right kind of volunteering. So I think that two-step process of there's a simple one that says, I want to go to a place that looks like a vacation paradise. And some people do that and love it and it works well. Others say, no, this is a complex decision. One of the really interesting stories that was a guy, a California guy, who decided he wanted to go closer to family. And he moved to a small town in North Carolina to be close to family and to be in a just gorgeous physical setting. And he got there, and without really expecting it, two of the things that he and his wife loved were great restaurants and great literature. And they realized through a discovery process that there were a very large number of these James Beard award-winning restaurants within an hour or two drive of their home, because people would go to New York, learn the skills of being a great chef, and then come back home and open a restaurant in their hometown. And some of these restaurants turned out to be very, very terrific, very well-regarded restaurants. And so he said, one of the joys that we've discovered is getting in the car, going for a 2 or 3 hour drive to get to one of these great restaurants in an interesting town. And during the day when we're in the town, we will visit either a literary site or an old musty bookstore or something to do with an author's home. And so they've got this kind of new activity that was location driven, but which was not anticipated fully by them. They thought they were going to just be close to family and close to a great geographical environment. So for them, it was kind of a discovery. And they just love that set of things. And they do it very impromptu. They just decide one morning, let's go. Let's head out to here. We'll call and see if we can get a reservation at such and such a restaurant. And he said they're seeing some of the really great, and in some cases, tiny little restaurants, but very well regarded. And then indulging their joy of literature as well.
Richard, how important, I think it's very important, I think it's probably obvious to all of us, but how important for a married couple when they're looking at location to really have that really critical conversation about what each of their visions are? You mentioned that this is a complex decision. I know I'm actually going through that right as we speak. So, but I find that communication is so critical between spouses in the stories and people you talk to. How important was that?
No, it didn't come up as frequently as I would have thought. In some cases, the decision of location was to stay where they are now. And so there was not this kind of crossroads. And then if you're staying at the same location and you got the same friends, the same connection to your family, there aren't as many big decisions. It's more, how am I going to spend my time? And then the two partners kind of working out, are they going to do things together? Or are they going to do things separately from each other? So I'm kind of dodging the question because it didn't come up very often. What came up was the connection to an activity or a hobby or a concern that they were going through. But the idea of going through that as a couple was not as prominent as I guess I would have thought.
Yeah, I think the connection to the activities and having that discussion is probably just critically important. Sometimes, yeah, I want to move to this state or I want to move to that state or I want to stay in this area or in that area. But once they kind of agree to that, then it takes a different focus, which is good. They get to move on with the discussion. Yeah.
So to answer your question another way, some of the people had gone through that and it was now a memory for them that didn't come up. And some just said, I'm staying where I'm at. But that location decision is where that becomes, I think, critically important to have that agreement and total agreement that this is what we should do together.
Some people think that work in retirement is an oxymoron. And I'm wondering, how are the baby boomers that you interviewed viewing work in later life, and how are they balancing work and fun?
Work in retirement, I don't think, is an oxymoron. I think work can do a lot of things for people. It can provide income if that's necessary, or income to do special things, like I'll work a little bit so I can take that special vacation, or I can go out to dinner to a fancy place on Saturday night. So it's almost financing a luxury. I think it provides a mental stimulation, a physical activity that is important to some people. But I think the thing, there's two stories that I just was really very gratified to hear about working in a way that the job looks like a hobby, that the job looks like, I'd do this even if I wasn't getting paid for it. And one guy decided to drive Uber. And he kind of was thinking, well, I'll do that to kind of top up the income. That was the primary motivator. Then once he got into it, he was having a ball. And I said, doesn't sound that much fun. You're just driving around. He said, no, you missed the point. He said, I love telling jokes and stories. I said, yeah. And he said, with Uber, you tell your joke or your story, the person laughs or doesn't laugh, and then you drop them off, and the next person comes in. You get to tell the same story over again. That's good. And you can do that all day. And by the end of the day, you're pretty good at telling that story because you've told it 12 times. And he said, it's so much fun. And it's part of the joy. It keeps me socially connected and socially active, and I'm having fun talking to people. And I meet some amazing people in the back of my car. Another person said, I knew I wanted to do something. I wanted to kind of afford the lifestyle without having any reduction of my lifestyle. So I needed to do something. And she came up with the idea of being a tour guide in the wine country, where she would get people into her vehicle, take them around to the wineries, tell them about the wine. And she said, the thing that's really joyful about it is the people who show up to go for a wine country tour are there to have fun. They start out with a big smile on their face. They're there to have a good time, and they want you to be part of that. And she said, it's just a joyful kind of an experience. She said that even extended to one group that sat in the back of her vehicle and started doing cocaine. And they said, do you want some of that? And she said, no, no, I'm driving. I'm not taking cocaine. What are you thinking about? But she said, the totality of that experience is just you're having fun with people and you're helping them have a good time. And she says, and I get paid for it? That's the extra bonus. But this is really great fun. So work as a hobby is, I think, a characteristic of some people's work in retirement.
So I found a lot of valuable lessons and advice in the stories that you've captured in your book. And I'm wondering, what's one story or lesson that you can share with us today to give people a feel for your book?
This is a couple that's been married over 50 years. Life has been very good to them. He was a doctor, and they felt very strongly that they wanted to give back in their retirement. And they didn't set about something that they wanted to have an enjoyable giving back every day. They were more focused on doing something important that others might not be willing to do. And so they began teaching anger management in a maximum security prison and using Buddhist meditation principles, which they are very much into, and dealing with the tough, hardened criminals who are angry, there for a reason. They did something awful and they wanted to help these people. And what I found most amazing about the story was they said, most days it doesn't work. Most days you go in and you don't help anyone at all. Sometimes you go in and people just scream at you. And she said, she in particular, there was a couple doing this, but she said in particular, she said, coming back says so much to those people around you. They didn't treat you well, and you come back for more. And you say, I'm here to help you. I know you were angry last time. Let's try again. And over a period of time, that persistence and that dedication and that prisoner knowing they wanted to help, knowing they were there for that reason, made a huge difference in several lives. There was one prisoner in particular who said, I have come to realize I can't be released from this prison in a way that I won't be back here in a very short period of time. I've got too much anger. I've got too much venom in me. I've got to work this out. I want to do that while I'm in prison so that I don't ever come back to prison. And Bruce and Jill kind of looked at each other and said, we can help you. We can help you. We'll work through with you whatever it takes to get you to the point you've just described. And then they go through a series of methodologies that are associated with Buddhist meditation, and they change lives of people who have had a really, really tough time. And Bruce in particular said, if I didn't have this, I wouldn't have a good feeling about my retirement. This makes it all worthwhile to me, even though it's the toughest thing I'm doing in retirement.
So, Richard, how have the stories that you heard influenced your own retirement?
I think it's opened my mind. I like to think of myself as open-minded and listening and all that sort of thing. But you hear a story like one about Bruce and Jill, and you say, wow, they're out there doing something really amazing. And asking myself, what can I do differently? What influence does this have on my behavior? I think it's given me a stronger sense of wanting to give back. And I do mentoring of social enterprises that are trying to solve major social problems, mostly in the developing world. And I think I've gotten a lot of reinforcement from the interviews that I've had with people who are doing similar kinds of things. The other one is kind of a work in process for me. I'm pretty sure I'm invincible. I'm pretty sure I'm going to last forever. And, you know, we all think that. We all think, well, I feel healthy now, so I'm going to be healthy forever. This book interview process led me to believe that I've got to get more realistic about this. I'm pretty sure now that I'm not invincible, not just at an intellectual level, but at a heartfelt level. I know that my days are numbered in some ways. There was a group called OWLS, Old Wise Learning Still. And this is five girlfriends that get together once a month to talk about end of life. And sometimes they laugh, sometimes they cry, sometimes they hold hands with each other, sometimes they have an agenda for the discussion, but they talk about whatever's on their minds and talk it through together. And they've developed, peacefulness is probably a good word to describe what they've developed. They've developed a way of thinking about what a lot of people just ignore. And when I heard them talking about that, I just said, why are they so good at addressing these issues that a lot of retirees are just ignoring? So I think that had a big impact on me.
You know, I was also thinking about all the wisdom that you've picked up, not only from your own life, but from other people's lives. What thoughts would you have about preparing for shifting gears, like the success factors, for, you know, before people actually retire?
I would say have a clear idea of what you want to go to. It is kind of a first principle. I would say a second principle, maybe even the most important principle, is learn by example rather than by a list. Part of the reason for the book being the way that it is because it just says, here's 50 stories. You draw your own conclusions. I'm not going to tell you the 10 things that I learned because your 10 things are different than mine. And the story about Bruce and Jill may appeal to you. Another story about climbing a mountain may appeal to you. Some of the stories about adversity may be particularly relevant to you if you're going through a rough patch. I've got two people who had a late life divorce that they've gone through, and it was tough, but they dealt with it and they came through to the other side of it. So I would say the lessons are look for examples rather than lists. And for some people, there are retirement books that tell them what to do, and that's what they need and that's what they want. I hope none of those people buy this book because there's no lists in there. I want people who say, I want to hear some stories, and then I'll figure out what that means to me. I want to learn by inference, not by prescriptive things in the book.
Power's in the stories. Very well said. Thank you.
I like your approach. So Dennis picked up on the fact that you ride 3,000 miles a year. He's also a biker, not a Hell's Angel biker, but a cyclist. Tell us about how you got into biking and what that does for you.
I would say probably in my 50s or so, I started biking regularly. I had been a runner and I'd done a couple of marathons and I just, my knees kind of gave out and I was looking for something else to do. Turns out biking is low impact and still great exercise. So I started doing that while I was working and kind of primarily on the weekends. Once I retired, I kind of made a commitment to myself that I'm going to be in the best shape I've been in my life. And the primary way of doing that would be through regular biking. So I go two or three or four times a week for, you know, reasonably medium length rides. And it's good physically, but I think it's probably at least as good mentally to kind of clear your mind, be out in a quiet space, and think through what's been going on in your life. So it's become an important part of my retirement, and one that when we had these fires here in California about a month ago, I had to go for a month without a bike ride, and it just about made me crazy. I was going, I got to go for a bike ride, but you can't go out when it's a smoke-filled environment. So for about a month, I went without a bike ride, and I found that it was part of my routine that I really missed and that it added to the equation for me.
You know, if you're anything like me, the indoor bike rides are not the same thing. It's the air outside when it's clear and good, right?
The other thing I like about biking is the speed that you go allows you to experience a lot. So when you go for a walk, you're going so slow, you don't see that much. You know, even if you go for a couple of miles, all you saw was a couple of miles worth. If you go in a car, all you see is the scenery whizzing by and you don't really appreciate it. With a bike, you're going at about the speed of being able to absorb what's the nature around you. Others may not have that view, but to me, that's part of the joy of biking.
No, I concur. I think that's great. I never would have thought it to put it like that, but yeah, spot on.
So Richard, if we could, one last question. So I noticed in your bio that you read 100 books a year. What have you read recently that you'd recommend?
This may not be a recommendation for everybody, but there's a book called CAST, C-A-S-T-E, and it basically says that if you want to understand racism and social strife and all that sort of thing, here's a different way of looking at it, that we may have more of a caste system than a racial discrimination system, that you get into a certain bucket and you're constrained by that in ways that are more environmentally related, more related to the context of your life rather than anything to do with the color of your skin or even your background. Whether you like or dislike the book, I would challenge anyone to read it and not be changed by it. Maybe angry, maybe say, no, that's not it at all. Maybe agreement in total, or maybe say, this is a remarkable new set of insights. It may or may not be a politically correct book, depending who, you know, what your politics are. But I would say it's a worthwhile read and one of the really great books I've read in the last decade.
My wife will particularly enjoy this part of the podcast because she's been, I'll use the word, encouraging me to read that book for about 8 or 9 weeks. So we'll be replaying the segment over and over again in our kitchen, I'm sure, until I finally read it.
It's pretty tough going. It's pretty tough going. It gets a little bit deep at times. It gets a little bit heavy at times. It gets a little bit challenging at times. So some people are going to get into it and say, what are you talking about? How could you like this book? I loved it. I thought it was great.
I appreciate that. And I will read it. I just have others that I've got going that I knew I wanted to free up to be able to go in deep in it. But now it'll be moving up on the stack.
Okay.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for sharing your insights and wisdom with us today. And congratulations on your book.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed this very much. And you guys are a nice team of interviewers. I enjoyed your very well-prepared questions. That was good.
Great. Thank you, Richard.
Well, that was a really great, interesting conversation today with Richard Hayduck. Joe, what were your takeaways from today's conversation?
There's a lot, and there's a lot in those stories that he captured so well in his, but the first one that jumped out to me was this commentary about we baby boomers and how we're approaching retirement. We're not going to go softly and gently into the night. We're going to continue to be active and be innovative, and I thought that made a lot of sense to remember. And that he highlighted the freedom of choice that comes along with retirement. And in particular, though, he told that story about the person who was volunteering and had four things going as a way to find what was right for him. And I think that's important in volunteering, but also some other aspects. Experiment, find the things that are right for you, use that trial and error as he talked about. I think that's a great, great point to keep in mind. And then he also brought up that phrase that both of us really seem to like, and that's relaxed intensity. And I know you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I got an insight from that. So I was thinking about his stories and talking about these life stories of people and their story and how they got to the point they're at. But when he said about relaxed intensity, I was thinking about a year and a half year old grandson who has a relaxed intensity on the way he learns and tries things. So I said, well, I bet you we learn how to be this way when we're a lot younger. And for a lot of us, as we get older into retirement, I know I can relate this to myself. Richard mentioned about a calmness and about doing it your own way. Yeah, there's power in that. And there's power in that freedom. But a lot of our being relaxed and intense is a way that we learned when we were younger. So keep that in mind. I had a couple of other things, Joe. The power of stories in general, you can discover a lot from talking about your story or from other people's stories. Where he was talking about that one he shared about the couple that was doing the work with prisoners, that's a phenomenal story. But I think the messages are important here behind this. The fact that people, when they retire, they're certainly not done yet. Look what drives their passion and their purpose. And giving back to others, doing something to give back to others, seemed to be a common theme. Even in his own retirement, he mentioned about having an open mind and what can I do differently to give back? And just constantly themes we hear over and over again. I think if people really take time to reflect and examine that, they can find true meaning for themselves. And the last thing that I picked up, and again, like you said, there were so many things mentioned about, he had mentioned about going from something to something and with focus on going towards something, and then is so important to prepare. And then he said, learn by example versus a list. And I wrote that one down. I said, that's great. You got to do it. You got to try it. Keep working it. It's a journey and you can find your purpose in a lot of these things. So I really enjoyed that today.
And that's a great thought to end on. Focus on what you'll be retiring to. It takes some time, takes some reflection, but well worth the time and resources to do so. Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.